criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Outside at night.
I thought you said you had a room.
I said I had a place.
Seriously, I've got just enough for you and then cab fare. No watch, no jewelry, nothing.
You think I want to rob you?
I know I'm not going near that bridge.
The hooker looks around.
Then here.
They step through an open gate.
Come on, it's freezing out.
I'll get you warm.
Like I said, half and half.
He lays his head back against the gate. And smiles as she runs her hands down his body. He looks to his left.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's all right, baby. That's
no,
okay.
It's not.
A bloody body is lying in the snow. Later.
Says he was partying at some club nearby. Took a wrong turn home.
Now, I'd find out more convincing if his fly was zipped.
So what's his story?
Well, I don't want to touch him until the ME shows up, but there's some blood on the picnic table. Looks like he bopped his head.
Eddie opens the victim's jacket.
This head bump is the least of his troubles. This guy's got lead poisoning. Any of the neighbors hear shots?
We just started knocking on doors.
All right, tape off the area and start a canvas for the murder work.
You got it.
Hey, Lenny.
Whoa, high roller, huh? Separated by denomination. Looks like somebody just knocked off a street dealer. Yeah, what a shame.
The New York City skyline is lit up at night. Police officers work the city streets. The word law moves in front of a squad car and a man is led away in handcuffs. Detective Lenny Briscoe is wearing his tie loosened around his open shirt collar. Detective Eddie Green is on the phone at his desk. Then Lieutenant Anita Van Buren is shown. The word order appears in front of a courthouse and a U.S. flag waves. Scenes from a courtroom are shown. Executive Assistant DA Jack McCoy is leaning on his desk. Assistant DA Serena Sutherland is also at a desk, and DA Arthur Branch has his arms folded across his chest. Law and order. The detectives and the assistant DAs walk down a hallway together. In Van Buren's office.
The Vic was Scott Giddens.
That's supposed to mean something?
BCI had his prints on file. 5 arrests in 3 years, all narcotics related.
He could have won a gold for skating. Not a drop of time. Any witnesses?
One woman heard 2 shots.
Yeah, well, I for one admire the shooter's restraint.
How's that?
It's pretty hard to get worked up over a dead drug dealer.
How many times do I have to remind you, Detective Briscoe, all life is sacred?
Not when it peddles the kind of crap our Mr. Giddens peddled.
Giddens lived around the corner from where he was shot.
Maybe we should check out his place.
Hey, you want to take a walk through the project?
Later, they're with a super who knocks on a door.
Can't go away!
Lenny nods, and the man unlocks the door. He pushes it open and quickly steps back as Lenny and Ed go inside. They rush into a bedroom.
Ed! I think we got a problem.
A partially dressed woman's lying on the floor.
Yeah, I need a bus.
Breathing shallow.
Possible overdose.
Tell him it's a rush.
St. Cassandra's Hospital, 1779 3rd Street.
Look, I'm not a crack whore, if that's what you're thinking.
How old are you?
Old enough to party with who I want.
Like Scott Giddens?
That's right.
Hey, I don't care one way or the other. He probably doesn't either, being this how he's dead.
Look, I don't know what's going down here. A few days ago, my friend Ron introduced me to this guy.
And you shacked up with him?
I needed a fix. He was dealing.
Yeah, but the problem is, Gina, when we knocked on your door, you told us to go away. Which tells me you thought you knew who was knocking.
What you wasting your time for, Lenny? Just book around possession and move on.
Okay. A guy came around maybe a couple days ago. He kept banging on the door.
You get a look at this guy?
Through the peephole. He's Puerto Rican or something. He had this thing on his face like a blotch.
What do you mean, blotch?
On his skin. This big red thing. He kept saying he was owed money.
Eddie shows her some pills.
These were found in your boyfriend's apartment. The ER doctor didn't know what they were, do you?
Gina nods.
Only he told me if I touched them, he'd break my legs.
Outside.
It's Nazi Speed, also known as Yaba.
Oh, like the sisterhood.
That's Yaya. Yaba is Thai for crazy medicine. Yeah, it's me. You gotta be crazy to take it. One mad dose and you're flatline for sure.
Dad shows a picture.
Hey, you seen this guy in any of your lists?
Scotty, what happened? He must have moved up in the world. Yaba's not the easiest thing to lay your hands on.
So there's probably a short list of suppliers.
Yeah, and I'll be damned if I know who they are.
Well, actually, you'll be damned if you don't.
I heard a rumor about some people scoring some in the club on the Lower East Side. Other than that, I don't know how to help you.
Well, it's a good thing you're not narcotics. Oh, wait a minute. You are narcotics.
Hey, don't blame me, all right? Blame the mayor. Blame Osama. Half my unit's been redeployed.
Anyway, this spot on the Lower East Side, is that off the Williamsburg Bridge?
Yeah, a place called Gammaville. Smack in the middle of the Latin playboy turf. They have a thriving protection business.
Gang unit should have a file on these guys.
Red blotch on the face. There ain't no gang ID I ever seen.
An interrogation.
Good thing you don't stick out in a crowd, Juan. Might have taken us more than 10 minutes to find you.
Find me for what?
Murder of a dealer named Scott Giddens.
Sorry, never met the guy.
We have an eyewitness who says you've been banging on his door.
I thought you were collecting for the March of Dimes, Juan.
Giddens owed you money for dealing on Playboy turf? Then he ends up dead. Now, if you don't want to connect the dots, we will.
Juan has a birthmark.
I'm not saying nothing.
Suit yourself, bro.
They start to cuff him.
Oh, come on. Oh, man, you gotta move so fast. Okay. Look. G was stalling me. But nobody from my house laid a finger on the guy. He paid up. Why would we pop G over rent? Dude was a seller. He printed money, man. The only reason why G got popped is because he's a pendejo. Didn't always think. Pissed people off.
What people?
Local yokels. This guy with a lead pipe chases him for 3 blocks. He sold some bad stuff to his kid, and kid OD'd, kicked.
This guy with the pipe have a name?
Yeah, something Parker. Drives a Greyhound or something.
They start to leave.
Oh, hey, where you guys going? You gonna give me a lift back to my place, right?
They leave, and Juan sits down. Apartment of Bill Parker, 61 Ridge Street, outside.
Takes 900 calls and finally you show up.
Excuse me?
Those kids across the street can't sleep with that damn boombox playing day and night. What do I pay taxes for?
I'm sorry, ma'am. We're not patrolmen. We're looking for Bill Parker. We heard he lives here.
Yeah, sure. Drag off the good guys.
The tax dollars at work.
Inside, a room is being redecorated.
Sorry about the mess.
Oh, hey, I've been there. So when's your little girl due?
In May. How'd you know it was a girl?
Our nursery had candy stripes.
This used to be my son's room, but...
I know. You lost him about a year ago.
Are you here about David?
No. This man was shot a few blocks away from here. Do you recognize him?
Could be anybody. Any reason why I should?
Take a closer look, Mr. Parker.
He takes the photo from Ed.
Hope to God he's dead.
Sometimes the big guy answers your prayers.
You think I had something to do with this?
In a perfect world, I'd hold him down while you smacked him with that pipe you chased him with.
In a perfect world, Davey wouldn't be dead. In a perfect world, the police would have arrested that bastard and locked him up forever.
I may have lost my temper once, but I didn't have anything to do with this.
Well, just for the record, where were you on Wednesday night?
At our weekly meeting, down the block. Same Weston's. The neighborhood watch.
In the church.
Unfortunately, people don't join the watch until after they've been affected personally. It took Davey's death to get Bill involved.
So what, you guys just roam the streets with weapons?
Flashlights. We're prophylactic, not punitive.
So what do you discuss at these meetings? What kind of batteries to use?
Scheduling. Who's available when?
Bill Parker was at the last meeting.
He brought the soft drinks.
Good old Bill.
The priest looks at Lenny.
Do you know what kind of hell he's gone through? His son died, and the man who killed him was still out on the corner, selling poison.
Well, maybe instead of carrying flashlights, you should carry cell phones.
And call who? You? We've tried that. Thank you. You people seem to have raised the white flag on that war on drugs. Well, we can't. We live on the battlefield.
Do you remember what time this meeting broke up on Wednesday?
Around 11. Why? What's this about?
Well, let's just say that when the prophylactic doesn't work, we're the punitive.
A pretzel vendor puts roasted chestnuts in a bag.
How long do you think it's going to take before Father Hogan calls Bill Parker?
Isn't that his job?
To cover up a murder?
No, to offer consolation.
Consolation or congratulations? I mean, I got the feeling this guy didn't mind if his parishioners ignored the Fifth Commandment.
Well, I'm just wondering if Moses would have had the great good sense to turn the other cheek in a case of somebody like Mr. Giddens.
Thou shalt not kill except drug dealers?
And ones who sell to kids, yeah.
Well, that rewrite might be okay to Moses, but it ain't to Pataki. We should go see if Bill Parker owned a piece.
Why don't you go ahead? I got a couple of calls I want to make.
All right, man, don't forget. Moses don't sign your paycheck.
Pupchek's Bar, 18 Avenue A.
What is this? Get me drunk? I confess to something I didn't do?
I just thought we'd be more comfortable here. I got a problem, Bill. I mean, the cards are stacking up against you. Now, my partner wants to bring you in for questioning, but...
You're looking out for me.
Well, the thing is, maybe I understand the situation a little better than he does.
Maybe you know wallpaper, but you don't know anything about my situation.
I know the world's a better place now that Scott Giddens isn't in it.
And where were you before Davey died? Where was anybody after?
Knowing and proving it in court are two different things.
Lenny takes out his billfold and shows Bill a photo of his daughter.
She was 24. A guy like Giddens killed her.
He stares at it, then looks at Lenny.
Did he go to jail?
Yeah.
Lenny stares at the photo, then shakes his head.
The thing is, I get up every morning, I brush my teeth, I shave, and I kick myself for not putting a .38 between his eyes. Maybe then...
Do not say closure. No such thing.
Both men lower their eyes.
You know, this is great. My kid dies, and no one lifts a finger. Someone kills this creep. Here you are, with 1,000 questions.
Not 1,000, Bill. Just one.
Fighting back tears, he looks at Lenny. In Van Buren's office.
I'm telling you, this guy wants to confess. He wants to call a press conference and shout, I killed the bastard. I almost had him.
Yeah, and if you did, it would send our case directly down the crapper.
Come on, we were just two guys sitting at a bar.
Yeah, but when one of those guys is a detective investigating a murder, the other guy gets to have his rights read to him.
Unless
what, Ed? You think I tried to dump the case against Parker?
I wasn't going to say that, Lenny, but since we're on the topic of bar, a first-year legal aide can get that confession tossed out for I can think of at least 10 reasons off the top of my head.
Well, then I guess I'm lucky he didn't confess.
Do you want this guy to walk?
No, but I can't blame him for taking care of the scum we didn't do anything about for a year.
Well, why do you suppose Parker waited so long?
Hey, he tried the good citizen route. It didn't work.
You know, maybe something happened at that neighborhood watch meeting and set him off.
Lenny nods. Fisher Locksmith, 193 East Broadway.
It was pretty routine. Talked about patrol shifts, scraping together money for a set of Nextels, some gang tags spotted over at Jefferson Middle School. Nothing that would make Bill blow a gasket.
Jefferson Middle School, isn't that where David Parker went?
Our boys played hoops together. Davey had a hell of an outside shot. Look, I know where you're headed, but there's nothing there. No way Bill could have killed that low-life dealer.
And you're so positive because you're tight with him?
I'm positive because after the meeting broke up, I walked Bill home.
Funny he didn't mention that.
Yeah, well, maybe you didn't ask.
They're walking outside.
If this guy did his job as bad as he lies, he wouldn't be able to pick his nose. Anyway, I'm thinking that the mention of Davy's old school might have stirred up some memories.
A couple of weeks ago, I'm sitting in this joint on the east side having a hamburger. The guy sits down at the table next to me, and I blurt out, Ron!
Who are you talking about, Lichtenstein from the 1-6?
Ron Darling from the 86 Mets. You know what my first thought was? I gotta call Kathy. She always had a thing for him. She's been gone 6 years. I don't know, you lose a kid, everything stirs up memories. So if we find one person from that meeting who contradicts Mr. Locksmith, we can threaten him with obstruction, force him to flip.
Yeah, but he probably speed dialed every member of the watch before we even hit the street, meaning 25 more versions of the same damn story.
So we find one non-member who saw Parker come home.
Between 11 and midnight. Most people watching Leno are asleep.
Not with that damn boombox going day and night.
At the play yard.
Why would we remember what happened last Wednesday?
Because some old lady couldn't sleep on account of this boombox. Now, being public servants, we can confiscate this thing as a public nuisance.
So I'm talking about Wednesday.
It's between 11 and 11:30.
Can't help you.
All right, Ed, read the box its rights.
Whoa, hold on, wait a minute. What he means is we can't help you because, you know, went to get some eats. Didn't get back to around, like, midnight.
Davey's dad, he's a bus driver or something, right?
Yeah.
You saw him when we got back from the bodega.
At midnight?
Yeah, midnight. That's what I remember. I saw him walking some freestyle.
Lenny looks at Ed.
All right.
He sets down the boombox.
It's funny. Father Hogan never mentioned a midnight house call.
Confessions are us. We deliver.
Outside the church.
I'm sure you know I'm not at liberty to discuss conversations I have with my parishioners.
Does that include lying about whether the conversations ever took place?
You asked me when Bill left, not whether I had seen him later that evening.
You sure you want to be splitting hairs with the police, Father?
No, I respect the law, Detective. But until the Vatican tells me otherwise, any conversation I have with a congregant remains between them, me, and God.
All right. Well, if God happens to tell you how Bill Parker got a gun, would you please give us a call? Because however he got it, it wasn't legal.
He takes Ed's card.
Thank you, Father.
The other day, I took a cab to the squad.
What's that, $40 from your place?
I didn't say I was at my place. Anyway, the point is, the driver had a piece right out in the open on the seat next to him.
And you're thinking bus drivers do the same thing.
Hey, what country do you live in?
Port Authority Bus Terminal Police Department.
Port Authority policy prohibits drivers from carrying firearms of any kind.
So what would you do if you found a driver was packing?
I wouldn't.
Well, what about passengers? Is it like boarding an airplane?
Some bus companies search passengers at random. Guy sees that happening. He ditches the gun in the men's room, the garbage, whatever. You know, you could take on all of Al-Qaeda with the crap these companies find.
What do you do with the weapons they confiscate?
Evidence locker.
Suppose I'm a driver. Could I get into that locker?
Only way in is if you had one of these special issue non-recrew keys.
Or a friend who could pick a lock.
The fact is, we had a hiccup last week. The 44 was misplaced.
The sergeant leaves.
Sounds like probable cause to me.
At the Parkers.
You get out of my boy's room.
I'm sorry, Mr. Parker. The search warrant authorizes us to search the entire apartment.
What could you possibly think that you'll find in here?
A revolver?
Do you really think that I would hide a gun in David's room? Hey, Ed, remember what this looked like 2 days ago? Ours took a week to finish.
Lenny knocks on the new wall.
Officer? We're going to need to break through the sheetrock.
The officer takes off his coat, then later uses a hammer to make another hole in the wall. Lenny's wearing rubber gloves as he reaches into the hole.
More insulation.
He reaches back into the hole and pulls out something wrapped in a towel. He opens it, revealing a gun.
44 caliber cock.
William Parker, you're under arrest for the murder of Scott Giddens. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law.
27th Precinct, Interrogation Room.
I understand why you lied to me before, Bill. Nobody wants to go to jail. Not with a little girl on the way. But you gotta know, if the slug that we took from that dealer's body came from that gun, you're gonna miss your little girl's first steps. A first communion? A confirmation? If I was you, I'd try to help myself.
Bill glances at Lenny.
He killed Davey.
That's right. He did. But guys like him, they don't stop with just one death. Guys like Giddens, they've been known to get violent, get physical. Been known to threaten innocent citizens. But judges know that. So do juries and DAs. Hell, Bill, people get let off on self-defense every day of the week.
In the observation room.
You can take the cop out of the father, but...
The problem is, Giddens wasn't armed when we found him.
Cordova enters.
Lieutenant, there's some priest here named Hogan. Says he's got information on the Giddens homicide.
Send him in.
Eddie turns off the volume and Father Hogan enters.
Father?
Yeah. You have the wrong suspect in custody.
All due respect, Father, it's not looking that way. My detectives found the murder weapon in his apartment.
I can explain that.
Be careful, Father Hogan. We have witnesses that put you with the Parkers on the night of the murder. So if he confessed to you and you're lying to protect him, that's obstruction.
I'm not lying. Bill Parker didn't confess to me. I confessed to him. I killed Scott Giddens.
Later, with Jack, a man is sitting beside Father Hogan.
Bill Parker was a sculptor. Did you know that?
metalwork. He would take these pieces of industrial steel, as junk, really, and turn them into works of great beauty. When David died, he stopped. It was as if Scott Giddens had ripped out his soul and stomped on it.
I understand why he'd seek vengeance.
I reminded him that he still had a wife and a baby on the way, but still, he felt that if he did nothing, he would be tortured in this life. And if he acted, he would be damned in the next. That's why I told him to give me the gun.
Hold on, Richard.
No. I appreciate your help, Jim. This is something I have to do. Bill Parker gave me his gun.
This conversation is over.
A week later, I used it to kill Mr. Giddens.
Where did it happen, Father?
North of the Williamsburg Bridge underpass.
Do you recall what Mr. Giddens was wearing?
Leather jacket, brown, blue jeans, a gray shirt. I shot him in the stomach.
The police showed him photos.
This man was a plague on the earth. A drug pusher whose poison killed children. The police could arrest him, but nobody could convict him.
Why did you return the gun to the Parkers?
I went to the Parkers to tell them justice had been done. He hid the gun to protect me.
You stop. It's enough. The Ewan Parker may think you're being clever, but I'm not going to sit in the front row while you commit suicide. I'm still his counsel, and I'm ending this interview right now.
With D.A. Arthur Branch.
Father Hogan's looking for martyrdom or sainthood or whatever other ridiculous thing you get these days for being entirely selfless.
In the secular world, I believe they call what he's looking for reasonable doubt.
And this bogus confession raises more than enough for an acquittal.
Unless we don't charge Bill Parker.
You want to indict Father Hogan?
Why not? He did confess.
Oh, come on, Jack. Whatever problems you might personally have with the church.
I've nothing to do with this. I'm just proposing that if the two of you are right and this is all a scheme to confuse a jury, let's do an end run of our own. One confession, one defendant, no doubt.
He's got a point. My guess, by confessing to something he didn't do, the Padres already scored enough points to impress the pants off St. Peter.
And what if he doesn't feel the same way?
We've got about 20 hours before we have to charge them or let them go. Now, if you want to come up with another plan, be my guest.
At the Parkers.
If you think I'm going to turn on my husband, you're crazy.
That's not why I'm here. Actually, I'm here for Father Hogan.
He sent you?
In a way. He confessed to the crime.
So why is Bill still in jail?
Because it's obvious to us that Father Hogan is lying to protect him.
Mrs. Parker turns away.
Did Bill say he killed Giddens?
He's scared. He hasn't said anything.
She sits down.
But he didn't say Father Hogan did it.
No.
Serena sits down.
So I can't do anything then, can I?
You can help me to convince Father Hogan that there's a better way to help your husband than by throwing his own life away.
Mrs. Parker looks away.
Sure, you don't want the wrong man to be convicted. I'm not asking you to incriminate your husband, but if you could just tell me anything.
You bastards, bastards. If only you did your job, a good man like that wouldn't have to...
She lowers her head.
He did it for us, you know. He did it so Bill wouldn't have to.
Wait a minute, are you saying that Father Hogan did kill Scott Giddens?
She crosses herself. Later, Serena enters the conference room carrying a large paper bag.
He'll be happy to know that we released Bill Parker.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, come on, Jack. I'm not going to fall for that.
None of us here wants a trial, Father. We're prepared to accept your confession and offer you
I will not accept a deal.
Richard, please, just go ahead and tell him how you made up the whole thing.
I don't think he can do that, Jim.
Serena takes something orange from the bag.
We found this jacket in the father's closet at the rectory.
So he has bad taste in clothes. That's not a crime.
The people in the neighborhood watch wear them when they go out at night.
Father Hogan nods.
The sleeve tested positive for gunshot residue.
Jack steps forward.
I can offer you 10 years, Father.
He sits, and Father Hogan shakes his head.
Give us a minute.
That won't be necessary.
You should listen to your lawyer, sir. With the coat and the confession, you don't stand a chance with the jury.
I will not plead guilty.
Then you're looking at 25 years to life.
I confess to killing Scott Giddens. I did not confess to committing a crime. Killing is not a crime when it's God's will.
Jack raises his eyebrows. Later, in Arthur's office.
Is he serious?
Here's Wheeler's notice of affirmative defense to prove it.
Justification?
Yes, I killed, but God told me to.
Well, you gotta admit, it's a lot more creative than the devil made me do it.
Next stop, virgin sacrifice.
The fact is, this country could use a double dose of whatever God's got on special today.
Perhaps, but not in a courtroom.
Why not? Are we one nation under God?
Don't tell me you believe Father Hogan's orders from above defense.
On the contrary, it goes against everything I do believe.
Supreme Court motion hearing.
The law recognizes situations where killing is justified. Self-defense, defense of others, the death penalty.
And in all of those instances, the use of deadly force must be in response to an imminent threat and be reasonable.
Here comes the part where he tells you belief in God isn't reasonable.
A priest claiming he heard God? How does a jury determine credibility?
We ask juries to dive into deeper deductive waters all the time.
We don't ask them to ponder the existence of God.
But we don't have to. The court already acknowledges his existence. In God we trust.
That's the building, not the law.
My point is, how can both the court and the legislature acknowledge the existence of God, yet deny a defense premised on that existence?
If a layperson tried to assert a God told me to defense, the court would render him incompetent to stand trial.
So, if you talk to God, you're pious, and if he talks back, you're crazy?
You said it, I didn't.
Well, then let's give Father Hogan an Article 730 exam and see if he's competent to stand trial.
The judge nods.
God bless.
Father Hogan is sitting in an office.
Do you believe in God, Dr. Olivet?
Elizabeth turns to him.
Yes. And yet you question whether I'm crazy for claiming I received his guidance.
I'm simply doing my job.
I'm sure the Roman soldiers said that too when nailing Jesus to the cross.
She sits down.
Do you think of yourself as Jesus?
No. Oh. I'm just noting a parallel. Jesus could return tomorrow and people would write him off as an illusionist, the next David Blaine. Society has a habit of explaining away miracles and then saying God must not exist because there are no miracles.
And you're going to prove them wrong?
I'm not on a crusade, Dr. Olivet. A man was destroying my community, poisoning my neighbors. I prayed for guidance, and the guidance I received was that I should kill him.
She leans forward.
At the time, did you know that it's wrong to kill someone?
I knew that killing is usually wrong. I knew that my actions were against the laws of man, and I...
He puts his hands together as if praying.
I knew that they were against every instinct I have as a human being.
Then why did you do it?
Because that's what God asked of me.
He laces his fingers together.
He had no choice but to follow his instructions.
We all have a choice. We all know what God expects of us. The question is, are we strong enough to do it?
In Arthur's office.
He understands the charges against him and is capable of aiding in his defense.
But he doesn't seem to understand the difference between right and wrong.
On the contrary, he understands perfectly.
Can't be wrong if God told him to do it.
And that's not crazy?
Father Hogan believes he gains enlightenment through prayer. If that's crazy, then half the world should be committed.
One man's delusion is another man's faith.
And we're supposed to convince a bunch of jurors that they were delusional all those Sundays that they went to church.
No, you need to convince Father Hogan to look reality in the eye.
In the conference room.
I understand your predicament, Mr. McCoy. Do you understand mine?
Actually, I do. I think it would include a willingness to accept punishment.
I'm willing to be punished, but what I'm not willing to do is to plead guilty.
Are you sure you want to do this, Father? Do you really want to put religion on trial?
Religion is already on trial. Islam is being tainted by fanatics. Judaism is being threatened by the recent rise in anti-Semitism. The Catholic Church is crippled by a sex scandal. For the first time in the world's history, three major faiths are in crisis.
And perhaps that makes this the worst time in history to challenge their validity.
No, on the contrary, maybe now, more than ever, God wants us to re-examine our faith. And if those are the consequences of my defense, amen.
And if you lose?
Where did your faith go, Miss Sutherland?
She watches him, then lowers her eyes. Later, she enters Jack's office.
You contact Bishop Durning?
He'll be more than happy to testify.
Of course he will. He can't have murder added to the mounting list of priestly iniquities.
You're really enjoying this, aren't you?
There's nothing quite like walking into a trial with an uncontested confession.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Smile, Serena. This is our inherit the win. This is where we get to prove in a court of law that there is no big guy up there with a white beard pulling invisible strings.
So what did those nuns do to you?
That's irrelevant. Anybody who knows that he knows gets my hair up.
If you want my advice, Jack, I think you should just let Father Hogan's confession speak for itself. No good can come out of debating religion.
Maybe I should have told that to the nuns.
Supreme Court, Trial Part 89. Bill testifies.
I thought he just took my gun to stop me from doing something stupid. I had no idea that he would take matters into his own hands.
So he didn't tell you beforehand what his plans were?
No. I never would have let him.
Because even through your grief, you realized that killing is wrong.
I lost a child. Mr. McCoy. Do you have any idea how much that hurts? It's like a knife in your heart that won't go away.
Jack nods.
I'm sorry, Mr. Parker, but I have to.
Oh, I know.
Please, tell us about the night Scott Giddens was murdered.
It was late. Father Hogan came to my apartment. That's when I noticed there were specks of blood on his fingers.
Did he tell you where the blood came from?
No. He didn't have to. I knew.
Jack goes to his seat, and Wheeler stands.
Did Father Hogan tell you why he killed Scott Giddens?
He said that God wanted him to do what man refused to do. That God wanted that child killer off the streets, that he wanted to keep our neighborhood safe. He wanted to ease the grief that Scott Giddens caused my wife and me.
Mrs. Parker cries.
And you believed him?
Do I believe in God, Mr. Wheeler? Yes, I do.
It's not what I asked, Mr. Parker. What I want to know is if you actually believe God put the gun in Father Hogan's hand and told him to shoot.
Nobody can prove to me that he didn't.
Bill glances toward the jury and Wheeler sits down. Bishop Durning testifies.
Although the church doesn't condone violence, God has historically been used to justify murder. From the Crusades to 9/11, by men who believe they were instruments of his will. But this belief is usually a product of either mental illness, geopolitical ambition, or misinterpretation.
Did you hear Dr. Olivet testify that Father Hogan was sane?
Yes.
Do you have any evidence to the contrary?
No.
Any evidence that he's a political zealot?
No. He's a good man.
So under your paradigm, if Father Hogan received a message from the Almighty, he misinterpreted it.
That's correct. The Almighty teaches us to save the sinner, not kill him.
He also teaches you to pray for his guidance.
Yes, but if that guidance calls for an act like murder, we should be skeptical.
I should hope so. But that's what confuses me, Bishop Durning. When it comes to something as important as murder, don't you think that God would be as specific as he could possibly be to eliminate any margin for error?
The bishop smiles.
Of course he would. Otherwise, what kind of God would he be?
Mr. Wheeler.
Wheeler stands.
Nothing, Your Honor.
Later, in a restaurant...
looks to me like the bishop just made our case.
Really? Then why do you suppose Wheeler didn't cross-examine him?
What could he possibly ask? The top gun in the local church just said Father Hogan made a mistake.
Yeah, that's one explanation. The other is that he realized your tactics were turning off the jury.
Why? How?
Because an imperfect God is no God at all. Did it ever cross your mind that the triers of fact in a murder case might not want to hear you air your disrespect of their faith?
That's not what I was doing at all. I can't beat this sanctimonious defense by tiptoeing around. Besides, how do you know they wouldn't like it? If nobody's watching, they could cheat on their wives, cheat on their taxes, impose the death penalty, all without remorse, all without worrying about redemption.
Most people want comfort, hope. They want to believe in something bigger than themselves.
You know what I believe? I believe that Father Hogan's pious platitudes and calm certainties ain't necessarily so. I believe that anyone who wraps themselves in the flag or in the cloth to excuse themselves from the rules the rest of us mortals have to obey is pulling a fast one. Pisses me off no end. I know what God wants. Come on, Serena. It's ego or hubris or narcissism.
So God's dead.
Proud to say I don't know, but I do know this, that Father Hogan's right to his conviction stopped at Scott Giddens' nose.
Supreme Court, Trial Part 89.
The first shot missed. My hand was shaking. I never held a gun before.
But you managed to hit Mr. Giddens with the second shot.
When I saw him fall back, I couldn't help but think, God steadied my hand.
God steadied it?
God gave me the strength to follow his guidance.
But he wasn't the one who pulled the trigger, was he?
No. Scott Giddens was a drug dealer who terrorized a neighborhood for no other reason than his own greed. He was a sinner.
What happened to the Fifth Commandment, Father?
Scott Giddens caused the death of a young boy. Exodus 20:13 may say, thou shalt not kill, but Exodus 21:12 says, he that smiteth a man so that he die shall surely be put to death.
Father Hogan addresses the jury. Wheeler looks at them, then returns to his seat.
Just to be clear, you killed Scott Giddens?
Yes.
So under oath, you're admitting you're guilty of breaking the law?
Man's law, not God's.
And you believe that the law of God should trump the law of man?
That's how I've lived my life. That's why I couldn't ignore his wishes.
You heard his voice, did you?
It wasn't a person-to-person call, Mr. McCoy. I acted upon the enlightenment that I received through prayer.
That's all. No burning bush, no pillar of fire.
If you're asking for proof, I can't give you any. That's the very essence of faith, Mr. McCoy. Belief, despite absence of proof.
And God wanted Scott Giddens killed.
Mr. Giddens caused a lot of suffering.
You thought he should be punished for his sins, did you?
Yes.
Well, that's certainly convenient. Your desire is matching those of God.
Objection.
I'm just wondering who spoke to whom.
Enough, Counselor.
After you received your marching orders, did you think about getting a second opinion? I mean, you know, check with your superiors at the church?
To doubt God? That would be hubris.
On the other hand, some might think it hubris not to.
Objection. Counsel is testifying.
Withdrawn. Did your lawyer tell you that an insanity defense was available to you?
He told me a lot of things, but I know in my heart that I am not guilty. I also know in my heart that a jury will believe me.
Then why did you hide the murder weapon?
Wheeler frowns at Father Hogan.
Mr. Parker said...
Oh, I see. Seeking the advice of man is wrong when it comes to committing a crime, but it's okay when it comes to covering one up. Is there any chance... You simply wanted to avoid man's punishment for breaking his laws?
Father Hogan's fingers are laced together and he lowers his gaze.
Maybe we can come back to that. Tell me this, Father Hogan. The suffering you said Scott Giddens caused the people in your neighborhood. Specifically, you're talking about the Parkers.
That's correct.
And in your mind, murdering Scott Giddens would ease the pain of losing their only son.
In God's mind.
Now that's interesting. Because if I remember correctly, Mr. Parker testified that losing his son was like a knife through his heart, which would not go away.
He looks at the Parkers.
A knife through the heart
hurts Father Hogan.
Your Honor.
So if God wanted to ease the Parkers' pain, he really screwed the pooch on this one.
All right, that's enough.
Tell me, Father Hogan, isn't it your job to comfort your parishioners?
His eyes glisten with tears.
Yes.
But you couldn't do it, could you? You were impotent to ease the Parkers' pain.
He lowers his eyes.
Maybe it wasn't God who screwed the pooch, Father Hogan.
He shakes his head.
Maybe it was you.
His hand is against his chin and one finger against his lips. He looks at the anguished Parkers, and a tear trickles down his cheek. Later in the conference room.
It's your meeting, Mr. Parker. We have to be in court, sir.
No. Call it off.
It's a little late for that.
But I did it. Father Hogan didn't do anything. He shouldn't be punished.
This is very noble of you, Mr. Parker, but...
He confessed and you believed him. Now why won't you believe me? The gun was in my house.
Excuse me, this is a private meeting.
Father Hogan rushes to Bill.
This is stupid, Bill. I won't let you take responsibility for what I did.
Don't listen to him. I am ready to go to jail.
Bill!
Don't you see what he is doing to you? He is mocking everything that you believe. Now, if the jury...
They won't.
He sits.
If they lose faith...
Then we still have ours.
What if that's not good enough? I prayed for their strength.
And your prayer was answered through me, Bill.
Bill watches him.
Well, this certainly makes things interesting.
Hey, you don't really believe him.
Jack shrugs.
It's not my call. It's up to a jury. 8 1/3 to 25.
Richard, don't. This gives us reasonable doubt.
Father Hogan glances at Wheeler.
I can't let this man put himself in harm's way for me.
Jack nods.
Going.
Fine. I accept.
Bill lowers his head and Father Hogan touches his shoulder. Bill looks at him and Father Hogan nods with a weak smile. Later at night, Jack's sitting at his desk looking out the window. Serena steps into the doorway.
Are you staying?
He shrugs and she steps forward.
Can I ask you something?
He nods.
Tommy Suter. He lived two doors down from us on Damon Avenue. He was a couple of years older than me, and as far back as I can remember, I followed him around like a puppy.
He leans on his desk.
A VA hospital in 1968 was no place for a puppy. It was pretty grisly, and it smelled bad. The boy in the bed beside Tommy's had already passed away. Tommy's right leg was somewhere in the basement. What was left of his face was tar paper.
He stares at his desk, and she watches him closely.
I squeeze in beside a priest who's urging Tommy to make a deathbed recantation of his sins. Tommy smiles with the part of his mouth that still works and says, "What difference would it make?" Priest moves on to the next bed. Tommy says to me, "God forgive me if I'm wrong."
He stares at Serena, then looks away.
I think that's the last thing he ever said. Took a lot of guts.
He sits back in his chair.
I thought it was right.
They look at each other. Then he smiles.
Me, I'm still tagging along after Tommy.
He continues to smile.